When she was 24, Lee Grant was poised to become a breakout movie star. She had had several well-received roles on Broadway and already been nominated for an Oscar. But when she found herself on the Hollywood blacklist, her life changed overnight. Ms. Grant has written a new memoir about her early life in theater and film and her fight to reestablish her career after being blacklisted. It's called I Said Yes to Everything. It's published by Blue Rider Press, and I'm very pleased that it brings Lee Grant back to our show. Hello.
Hello. Well, I have to tell you that I was brushing my teeth this morning, and NPR is on all the time. And
it was a nice little piece about you today in a morning edition.
Was
Sarah Fischko.
Oh, I heard about it. She's wonderful. But you are my friend. You are the one I listen to every morning. And when I heard Lee Grant is going to be on Lenny Lopate, I just jumped over the sink with my toothbrush in my hand.
You didn't know you were coming here?
Oh, no, I knew, but I didn't. I had the radio on, and all of a sudden I heard my name, you know.
How old were you when you realized that you wanted to be involved in the arts? Was it the arts, or was it always
acting? I was about 17 when I went to the Neighborhood Playhouse.
But you'd already been on the stage of the Metropolitan Opera House as a child.
Oh, well, that was, you know, I took ballet there. And so Gadi Kazaza stopped me as I was crossing the stage. I was four and when I did that opera.
And the New York Times called you precocious, but you thought the reviewer had written precious.
Yes, well, I was four. I didn't know what precocious meant.
You studied at Juilliard before you went to the Neighborhood?
Well, I went from high school graduation when I was 15 to Juilliard, but I had a high little voice like my mother and my aunt had. You know, they imitated the movie stars, and at that time, the rich black and white stars always talked like this because they were rich, and so my mother and aunt did. So when I went to Juilliard, I had that high, you know, pitched rich girl voice, and I learned to lower it at that, you know, at the school.
You didn't feel you were talented.
Oh, I
initially, you say in the book, but that changed at a certain point.
I don't think I said that.
Okay, well, maybe I read into something. You were being cast in young ingenue roles when you started out, and what did you feel about that?
Well. In the early 50s, I was asked to do the ingenue role in Detective Story.
Mm-hmm. And that was a great role.
Well, I didn't think so. I thought it was, you know, when asked to describe her boyfriend's eyes, she says, brown and green flecked with gold. Well, exactly. So I got to the line and I laughed and I asked if I could do the old lady shoplifter who was 40, you know, and to me at that time, that was the old lady. And that's, you know, doing the character part was the one that really excited me.
Couldn't you have just changed that line a bit? Flecked with gold.
The character embodied that line.
And then in 1952, your career came to a halt when you were put on the Hollywood blacklist. You were just 24 years old. Mm-hmm. Were you a political person?
No, not at all. I'd never read a newspaper, actually. When I left Detective Story, I did All You Need Is One Good Break, and it was written by my then-to-be husband, Arnie Manoff, and Joe Bromberg was in it, and he was a blacklisted actor from the coast. The whole cast, actually, were blacklisted, and he was being called in front of the committee again, and he said to me, you know, I have a bad heart. I told them that. I appeared before them before. I can't do it. And he left the country, and he went to London and opened in a play to very good reviews and died of a heart attack. And I was on Broadway at that time in another play, and they asked me as a young actress to say what I felt about him. And this was at the Edison Hotel, and there were about 2,000 people. There was a huge feeling of loss for him. He was a group theater actor. And I got up at a certain point and I said I felt his death was due to his being hounded by the Un-American Activities Committee. And 2 days later, I was in an actor's equity meeting, and the actor in front of me said, well, I see you've made the list. And he handed me Red Channels, which was the book that had all the names in it, and they had my name with the comments that I'd made about Bromberg.
And that was it? You now were branded as a kind of a communist sympathizer?
Yeah.
Guilt by association?
Well, I don't think they thought it was guilt by association. All of us were enemies.
Altogether, over the years, some 500 people from the entertainment industry, including some of the most famous people who are black or gray listed, and some of the writers and directors worked under aliases, mm-hmm. or like Joseph Losey and Jules Dassin, they moved to Europe to work.
Yep.
A number of actors came back to New York to work in theater, then later when TV opened up. What were you doing?
I was home taking care of my two new stepsons and cooking and trying to learn how to be a new mommy and a new cook. I'd never washed a dish in my life before that. But
go out for jobs? Did you?
Oh, yes.
You auditioned? What did they tell you?
Well, I didn't go out for jobs on television or film. I was in New York, and New York was theater. New York was Broadway, and the Blacklist had never been on Broadway. Actors' Equity and the Producers Association agreed that there would be no Blacklist. Mm-hmm. So I worked in theater.
And that kept you going for the 12 years or so?
Well, I fought. I grew up. The Blacklist years, you know, I was 24 when it started. I was 36 when it was over for me. So,
well, for the movies, those are really important years for an actress.
Well, when I was finally off at 36, I was driven. I was very driven and very scared that that my career would go down. I was, you know, too close to 40. And so I lied about my age, and I did everything I could to keep going.
Didn't the mayor of Los Angeles take 5 years off of your driver's license?
Yes, he did. Mayor Yorty was a dear guy, and I told him that there was a mistake on my driver's license, that I was 5 years younger, and so he obliged.
My guess is Lee Grant, who's written a memoir called I Said Yes to Everything. You write in the memoir that your education began with the Blacklist. In what ways?
Well, in every way. In every way. It was a pure accident that I went on it. And my husband, the writer, Arnie Manoff, believed very much. He was a communist, and a lot of his friends were either communists I didn't know or left, and they were the people I most admired and wanted to be with, the people like Zero Mostel and Dalton Trumbo and Ring Lardner Jr. I felt very privileged to be friends with them and to be a part of their life. And so this was a choice that I made as an artist, actually. I'm a very, very committed. I was a very committed actress and a committed artist. And these people, to me, were the cream of the crop.
In the case of Dalton Trumbo, he still was writing film scripts under other names. That only changed, I think, with Spartacus, when Kirk Douglas insisted that he get a writing credit. And Kirk Douglas was here. He talked about that. He said that that's when he broke with Stanley Kubrick, who still wanted either a fake name or Stanley wanted the writing credit himself.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a documentary on Kirk and Michael.
Didn't your husband ask you to join the Communist Party?
No. Actually, he said, you know, if you join, I think our friends would be more, more easy around you if you join. And so I really thought that I was part of it. I didn't need to join. There was no card or anything.
When were you no longer being blacklisted? Were you aware one day that the whole, that had just been lifted?
Well, when I left my husband, I contacted a very, very important guy in Washington, Max Campbellman, and he took the case to the Un-American Activities Committee, and by this time, everybody was off but me. And the condition that I work again was that I name my husband. And that kind of demand was so outrageous and so repellent.
Well, they knew that your husband had been a communist.
Yes.
So this was just some kind of a process, cleansing yourself?
No,
in
it
their
wasn't.
Eyes?
It was a hand on your neck. It was a hand on the back of your neck. You can't work until you name your husband. And this was when the blacklist was over. Everybody was working. And so that kind of demand was inconceivable, just inconceivable to me.
You got a job in television. Television loosened up before the movies, didn't it? You were on Peyton Place.
Well, the blacklist was over when Mr. Campbellman went up to the House Un-American Activities Committee guy who wanted a favor from him. And he said, I'll do the favor if you let Lee off the blacklist. And they said, okay. And so, it ended with a whimper instead of the
back. And you didn't have to name the name, even though they knew the name.
Yes.
Did you feel that your film career had been put on hold when you were blacklisted, or did you feel you were starting over again when you went back to work?
It was a whole new world. It was a whole new world out there. First of all, I landed in Malibu. And Malibu was so beautiful, and the sand and the ocean. And I had my daughter, Dinah, who was 8 years old by that time, and my boyfriend, Joey, who became my husband later on. And the starkness of difference between the life in New York and the kind of low, easy, music-driven life in Malibu was just, it was sensational.
But don't you live here these days?
Oh, I do. But that was when I started working on Peyton Place.
And then you were in some prominent movies in the 60s and 70s, In the Heat of Night, Landlord, Shampoo. You won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress, Shampoo. There were some other films that were also memorable but not as critically acclaimed. On the other hand, did you know that The Valley of the Dolls wasn't going to be a masterpiece when you started working on it?
But The Valley of the Dolls is more popular today than any of the others. It's became a cult film because, it's so bad, it's good,
Did you make a decision to take any role that was offered to you? Is that why we have this? You wrote made the title of the book, I Said Yes to Everything?
Well, of course. Actors don't have that choice. Maybe leading actors do, but I'm a journeyman actor. All of us are. And so, for one landlord, you do one Valley of the Dolls, and the actors in it are your friends and your family. Actors become family.
Although there are some actors you wonder, why did that person take that role?
Money.
And it was simply money. Does Robin Williams need the money?
Who?
Robin Williams. That's a whole other
story. That is a very complicated story.
But then you won an Oscar for Shampoo. So did that mean that Hollywood was telling you something?
Oh, I do. I really.
Not that you didn't do a great performance in it.
No, I'd been nominated three times, two times before and one afterwards. So, and I'd lost the other two. So when they said my name, I didn't hear it. Lily Tomlin was sitting in front of me, and I said, congratulations. She said, Lee, they said your name. And it was hard for me to believe. And I think on that walk up to get it, I felt clean. I felt exonerated. I felt that everybody there was on my side, and that I made the fight, that I'd won it. And And I lost the intensity of my desire for acting.
If you hadn't been blacklisted for all those years, you think that you would wouldn't have gone on to make documentary films?
Oh, absolutely. The blacklist was absolutely
a reason why you decided to become a director as well?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, I had to, you know, I was of the age where I would no longer be that hireable in Hollywood. I had the greatest run of my life, and I, you know, my sensible self told me that it couldn't go on too much longer.
You made Down and Out in America, won another Oscar.
Yeah. Yes.
Not for acting in this case. But is any Oscar equal to any other Oscar, or is one more significant to you?
No, well, that one was very significant to me because I was speaking my mind through the documentary. I wasn't saying other people's words. It was the Reagan era. It was the first time that I saw homeless people on the streets of New York. And the first time people were let out of their work in factories, first time farmers were tossed off their land. And for me to be able to say that without being blacklisted was a huge jump. And so I did documentaries after that and made them into movies for television.
And if you hadn't been blacklisted, I'm sure you would have had a very different kind of career. But
absolutely. No, that was my college. That was my education.
Lee Grant will be speaking with Patricia Bosworth at the 92nd Street Y tonight at 8:15. You can get ticket information on our show page at WNYC.org. Her book, a memoir called I Said Yes to Everything, is published by Blue Rider Press. And Lee, it has been such a great pleasure having you on our show.
Lenny.
On our show, you're never blacklisted. You're always welcome here.
Oh, I just love being with you. I just listen to you every day and love being with you.